It's the Good Glow podcast with Tori Towie. This season of the Good Glow is brought to you with thanks to Dove's new Advanced Care Body Wash. I'm so excited to work with Dove this season. And this week I've been using the Anti-Stress Advanced Care Body Wash. And this is made with chamomile and oat milk. This really is self-care in a bottle, so why not try it out? Unlike ordinary body washes, it's made with 24-hour renewing micro moisture. It's a groundbreaking new technology from Dove that deposits millions of tiny but powerfully moisturizing droplets that, instead of getting washed off, absorb deeply and continuously work with your skin's natural renewal process to strengthen your skin's barrier and help retain and boost moisture even after your shower. That's my favorite bit. Even after your shower, it's working for you 24/7. So why not try Dove's new Advanced Care Body Wash, available now nationwide. Welcome along to a very special episode of The Good Glow today. I'm sure lots of you heard of Tori's story over the summer. She's 28 and made headlines in Ireland and around the world when she was placed on a travel ban in Dubai and was unable to get home. Tori worked for an airline overseas when she met a man and married him after just a few months of dating earlier this year. The relationship became abusive, allegations which he denies, and Tori found herself helpless and alone. Today, she tells us about the awful night when she felt like there was no way out for her and found herself charged with attempted suicide and consuming alcohol. Her nightmare continued the next day until her mum arrived in Dubai unannounced in an attempt to get her home. With the help of Mary Lou McDonald and Simon Harris, the charges were dropped and Tori was free to return to Ireland. Now, still in her own recovery, she has vowed to help other women. Just leaving a trigger warning here, and as always, I will leave important phone numbers in the show notes. I wanted to say a massive thank you to Tori for telling her story on The Good Glow today. And this is less about the terrible things that happened to her and more about the amazing people that helped her along the way and the hope that she still has in her heart that this was just a chapter in her life and the best is yet to come. Tori, welcome to The Good Glow. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really good.
It's good to see you. And just for the listeners, you're in my home and thank you so much for traveling from Roscommon to Dublin.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
How are you since you got home?
I'm really good. I feel positive. I think my friends and my family have definitely been instrumental into making me feel like the old me again. In the beginning, it was very, very difficult. I was very, very anxious when I first came home. But yeah, like I'm in a good place right now.
I said to you when you came into the kitchen that we'd been on the phone to each other last month for about an hour.
Yeah.
And even in that month, it seems like you are in an even better place than when you were talking to me then.
Yeah, no, I am in a much better place. In the beginning, I just felt so... In the first few days of coming home, I was surrounded by a lot of people. But then as the days went on, you know, and I started to feel just anxious, overthinking everything. But now I feel, now that time has passed, I feel like I'm slowly getting back to the person I used to be.
Oh, so good to hear. And you do get there, I think, in time. And when you're patient with yourself and when you're surrounded by love, it's so important. Obviously, so many people in Ireland were watching your story in horror. And it was just so awful to see. I think it felt like a summer of violence against women. So for you to share your story was so brave. But can you tell us a little bit, I suppose, if you met somebody who knew nothing of what had happened over the summer, like, where do you begin?
So I suppose it started with, you know, I met this guy and everything was going so well. Like, I thought he was the best thing ever. He was so nice to me. And yeah, like we were getting along so well. And then he proposed and we got engaged and we moved in together. And then things just kind of went downhill after we moved in together. He was very controlling, aggressive, and just physically abusive. So I kind of found myself in a position where I was isolated from everyone. I was afraid to leave the house in case I get in trouble. And at the time, you know, my friends, my family knew something was off, but I just kind of isolated myself from everyone, because even my friends in Dubai, I felt bad. In a way, I felt like a lot of shame around it. I felt like I had brought this person into my life and, you know, they're worried about me now and I don't want this to affect them. And, you know, I should have saw the red flags in the beginning. And why did I let this happen so fast? That I just felt like I'll handle this on my own. You know, I'll fix this, or, you know, things will get better. I kept telling myself, you know, just give it time, things will work out. But in hindsight, I wasn't able to handle the situation at all. It was just, it was more than me.
And like, even when you're speaking there, it's everything you read about what a victim goes through, trying to protect everyone around them, you know, being scared to admit what is actually happening. And like you said, there was just so many red flags. Can you tell me about moving to Dubai? Did you move as a single person?
Yeah, so I moved to Dubai. Now, I was in a relationship for 6 years before I moved to Dubai, but after I moved, that kind of just fell apart. But like, I loved it. You know, I loved the training. I met the most amazing people. I got to travel a lot. I met some of my friends for life over there. So up until kind of meeting him, Dubai was a very positive experience for me.
And how did you feel over there? Like, obviously you had the world at your feet. It must have been so exciting.
Yeah, it was so exciting. And it's nice to kind of to move away from home by yourself. You know, I didn't go over with friends. I had to start a new life. It pushes you outside your comfort zone, because you have to, even if you're like a quiet, shy person, you know, you have to go and you have to make your life somewhere else. You have to make friends. You have to, you know, and I think that, like, I feel grateful that I got that opportunity to do that. Like, I'm proud of myself for moving over there. But yeah, like, it was such a good experience. Like, Dubai can be such a fun place to be. And like that, I wasn't stuck over there for long, because, you know, you're flying to different countries maybe 2 or 3 times a week. So even when it used to get really hot in the summer, you know, you'd be flying to London in 2 days and then back to the hot weather, then over to Sydney. Like, it was, like, I'll always be grateful for that experience. Like, that's one thing that I can take away from that. It was like, I don't regret moving there at all.
Yeah, even when you're talking about it, I can see, you know, how exciting it was for you. And I'm like scared of flying, so I often like look at cabin crew and I'm like, they've such a great life and they get to go to all of these amazing places. So how long was your life like that for before you met this man?
Nearly almost a year. Like, I went over in April 23, and then it was 7 weeks of very intense training. Like, when I explain to people the training, it's so intense, but it's so much fun. You know, when you're on a flight, you'll spend like 24 hours with this group of people and you'll never see them in your life again. And you could do 17 hours on a flight. You know, you tell each other your life stories. Like, some people cry because they broke up with their boyfriend, and you go through so much with them, and then you get off the flight and you say bye, you never see them again. But that's the kind of nice thing about it. And then you meet a different set of crew, and it's just, everyone is from a different culture and a different background and a different religion. I think that's like the most amazing part of the job.
Oh, I love that. That's so beautiful. And it's so nice that you do have fond memories of that time. You said something interesting to me, that when you met this person, your mum had a kind of weird feeling.
Yeah, she did have a weird feeling, because I mean, I was so excited. I was calling my friends and my mom back at home. It's like, this guy, he's so nice, you know, like I go on a flight and I'll come back and he'll like clean my apartment and make me dinner. And he's always buying me flowers and getting me gifts. And I remember saying to my friends, it seems too good to be true. And my mother always said, beware of those who bear gifts, you know, because, you know, sometimes there's a hidden agenda. And, you know, he proposed to me quite quickly. And I did in the back of my mind go, it's a bit too soon. But I just was like, you know, he's so nice. We get on so well. Like, we do camping trips together. And I just thought, I'll just go for it. Like, everything seems perfect. Like, in my eyes, perfect. Now, maybe I was overlooking red flags that were there and I just wasn't seeing them at the time. Because I think around November, December, I loved my life in Dubai, but I was starting to feel very lonely over there. Like, I spent Christmas Day in Dubai by myself and New Year's Eve, and a lot of my friends had gone home. So it was around this time that I'd met him. Mm. So I think he kind of just came into my life and I just thought he was the best thing ever. But yeah, I never expected it to go how it did. And I thought that when things started to turn bad, I suppose this is kind of a lesson for the future and to anyone else, is you can never fix somebody. Mm. You can never change them, because, you know, they'll say they'll never do it again and cry and whatever, but you have to put your happiness and your safety first above anyone else. Because sometimes, like, I feel like I'm a empathetic person. Like, when someone's sad, I feel sad. If someone cries, I feel tearful. So that was the situation with him. I would, in a way, feel sorry for him. Mm. And I would get drawn back in. But, you know, everyone always told me, you know, he'll never change. He'll do it again. And it's so true. And in that moment, you don't want to believe it. And you try to hold on and you try to make things work and you think things will get better. But it doesn't. It never does.
And how quickly did it turn bad? So you met him just after Christmas.
Yeah, I would say April was like the big shift, just to start like talking to me more aggressively, the control.
And how quickly did you marry him?
I married him, so we got married in March. So it was like really, really fast.
And that's, I suppose, just to give people context, that's a visa thing probably, is it?
Yeah, like to live together over there. He proposed and we intended on having a wedding in Cape Town in like a year or two time. But because of where we were living in Dubai, it just, people that live over there, they'll understand, like, it makes sense to get married. And I just had faith. Like, I know we didn't know each other that well, but I didn't ever see it going like that at all.
Yeah.
Not to the extent that it went.
I suppose you're so far from home and didn't want to ring your mum and maybe share what was going on. But was people around you, did they notice a change in you?
Yeah, like even my mother, talking to her after, she said to me, you'd be on these layovers, you'd be video calling me, showing me all these places. And she was like, when you met him, it just all stopped. My friends at home had noticed that I wasn't replying anymore, or it would just take me weeks to reply to a voice message. It also wasn't very like me. My friends in Dubai, they had seen him, you know, they were telling me, leave, get out, like try and go home. But I think that's, people go, why didn't you just leave? But it's not as simple as that, because when I took a case against him, he then took a case against me, which put me on a travel ban. So it's not like you're living and you're like in your own country and your family's down the road. You know, I couldn't just move out or leave the country. And then, like, because I had a travel ban, I couldn't work at the time. So I just felt stuck and I didn't want to contact anyone at home. I didn't want anybody to know, because I know my mother would be so worried and frantic, and I didn't want to upset her. And I just kind of blamed myself, thinking, well, like, it's like I brought him into my life, so I need to fix this myself. I'll deal with it myself.
It's such important work that you're doing in educating people on this now, because what you've been through is unimaginable, but there has to be people we know that are suffering in this way and they're not speaking out. So take us back then. So the first time the police got involved was April, and because they were involved then, they put you on a travel ban, is that correct?
Yeah, so I took a case against him because of the domestic violence, and he retaliated and took a case against me. I don't know what, like, it's very easy, you can kind of just in Dubai, you can say someone did this to me and they just instantly put a case against you until you can prove your innocence. So I couldn't move forward with that case because then I was on a travel ban, and he wouldn't drop the case unless I dropped the case against him. So then if I'm on a travel ban, I can't go to work and I can't earn. So then I had to eventually drop the case. That's why I think it's very different in that country. If you do meet the wrong person, just the way the system works, it's very different to somewhere like here. Like, I just accepted, like, this is my life now. I just have to try and keep the peace and just try and live with this.
So then the night that everybody has heard of in Ireland, and the night that you were taken into custody, can you tell us, you know, what you remember, what you're willing to share?
Yeah, of course. So it was just like a normal night in the house. We were having dinner, and we're having like wine with the dinner, and it was the same thing. It was just getting aggressive and aggressive. I just kept thinking, I can't go through this again. I'd rather die on my own terms. And I just knew what was going to be ahead of me. And I was just so broken at this point. I was like, I can't do it anymore. Like, and I was never a depressed person. I'd never really thought about taking my own life or anything like that. But I just know I can't, not again. Like, I can't. And I was like, I was lucky to get out last time. This time I won't get out. And because I already knew how the system worked over there, I was like, I'm not going to get help, you know. So I locked the bathroom door and I went in. The next thing I remember is the police opening the door. And there was like, they gave me oxygen. And then they got one of, because I was in my pajamas, they got me a dress and they told me to put it on. And they took me into the police car, and then they brought me to the police station, and I rang my mom because I was like thinking, this isn't normal. I think they're going to take my phone off me and no one's going to know where I am or what's happened to me. So I rang her, and
so you were able to ring her in the police station.
I rang her quickly because, and thankfully I did, because they took my phone off me after that. And they were speaking in Arabic, so I didn't know anything that was happening. They took me to the cell. They strip searched me. And then they just put me in a cell. They didn't tell me how long I was going to be there for or anything.
And you didn't know why you were there?
No, and I didn't know why I was there. So when I went in, there was like, it was like a long corridor with individual cells going off the corridor and just like mattresses on the ground. And there was girls in there, like, and they were really nice. I came over and they like sat me down on the mattress, and I told them what had happened to me. And some of them were there for 7 months, some of them years. One girl I spoke to, she was 22. She was there 7 months, and she was at a party, and she was taken away because there must have, something went happened at the party, but she said she was at the wrong place at the wrong time. And no toothbrush, no, like, she's in the clothes that she was wearing the day they took her in. She has no idea when she's getting out. She's no family in Dubai. She was from Belarus.
But then there's, and she'd been there for seven months.
And I thought, oh my God, I could be here for years, because I was talking to them and they said, yeah, like what you did, like they take that really seriously here.
Had you been informed what you were charged with at this point?
No, they just asked me, they said, did you try to harm yourself? And I said, well, yeah. And but I said, because of him, you know, and I explained the situation of why, like, I was trying to escape from him. And then they just put me in the cell. And then there was another girl. She was there. She had been there 7 days for drink driving. But again, no idea when she's getting out. She hasn't been told anything. And like if you have to have money over there to make a phone call. But if you go in there with no money, you can't contact your family. So some people mightn't even know where these people are. There's children in there as well, with their mothers. And then all I remember is the lighting, you know, like in like a surgical,
yeah,
like in surgery, it's like this huge, like really, really bright light. And I was asking the girls, when you're going to sleep, do they ever turn the lights off? And they said no. So I'm like, you're 7 months living in this corridor with the lights on 24/7 and no bed. And they said, yeah. And then I started to freak out. I was like, I can't do this. How are you coping? And they were like, it's okay, be strong, you'll get through it. Now I was released at 11 o'clock. I don't know why. I think my mother had been onto the embassy at that point, so I don't know if that had got me out. But they had, I remember asking them, I received like a reference number, like by text message. So I went up to the police officer after when I was released, and he said, oh yeah, you might just have to pay a fine. It's nothing. Go and speak to the prosecutor Monday morning. So I was at the prosecutor at 7 a.m. Monday morning, and they said, oh no, he's not here. He's over in this other building. I went to the other building. Oh no, he's not here. He's in the other building. So then I went, and what they were kind of giving me the like runaround, and all while they were telling me to go to these different places, they were pushing the case to go to court. They didn't want me to, because usually the process is you speak to the prosecutor and explain yourself before it gets pushed to the courts. Mm. But they had pushed it to the courts. I spoke to lawyers because I didn't even know what I was charged with. So they were able to look up my case number and tell me what the charges were, which was alcohol consumption and attempted suicide. And then when I spoke to lawyers, they wanted a fee to even look at my case, 20,000 dirhams, so about 5,000 euro, just to look into the case.
And can you go back to the night in the cell with these women who have been there for months under all different circumstances? Like, what did it feel like to be connected to women like that in that moment, or to feel the kindness of them? Because I would imagine that you would feel scared going into somewhere like that.
Yeah.
But it seems like you were embraced by these people.
I was scared. I was so scared. And I went in and they came straight up to me. There was two girls from the Philippines, and they told this other girl to move off the mattress to let me lie down because I'd just come in. And they were like, it's okay. Do you want, like, some of them had biscuits and coffee, and they just kept telling me everything's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. You know, and they were there for very minor things. And when I was released, it was kind of bittersweet because I was like, why are they still there? Like, I, you know, there's a bit of there's a class system,
mm-hmm,
of where you're from, what country you're from. And I think that is one of the sad things about the country. And I feel like I'm lucky probably because of where I'm from, you know, especially when I came back to Ireland, you know, and the government got involved and the people got involved. Those girls, like, were there, they're not going to have the help that I got. And it just makes you feel so lucky and privileged. I thought about them a lot because I felt like guilty, you
know?
Yeah,
I was going to say, it's like you feel guilty.
Yeah.
And what happened to him that night?
He was brought to the police station. They took a statement off of him. And because then when I was released, I went home, and then he arrived home. So he had said that he rang the paramedics, but apparently he called the police. So he knew, I think he wanted to get me in trouble. I don't think it was over concern for my welfare.
Yeah.
I think it was to protect himself.
You didn't know then what you know now.
Yeah.
So that's probably why you went home, because it was all, it seemed, maybe, I won't put words in your mouth, like it was all a big confusion. It was,
yeah,
a mess.
I didn't know how bad it was until, like, I went to one lawyer, then two lawyers, three lawyers, and they were saying it could go into 100,000 and it could be 6 months in prison. And that's when we were like, there's nothing we can do. Like, we've kind of exhausted all different avenues and this is really, really serious.
So when you came out of the jail that morning, did you ring your mum?
My grandfather had just died, so her dad had just died. So she, I remember she was trying to get over and miss the funeral. And I said, no, like, go to the funeral. You know, and I was like, it's okay, everything's fine, I'm fine. You know, I was just trying to make everyone not worried. And then I got the message to say, don't be angry, but I'm here in Dubai. When I got that message, I instantly thought, oh my God, he's going to go nuts now that my mother's here. And he insisted on coming with me. He wouldn't allow me to meet my mother by myself. And I begged him, because I explained to him, my mother wants to see me on my own. But it was just causing another argument. So I said, okay, fine, come. She met us in the Mall of Emirates in like a public place. And like, she will even say, I couldn't even make eye contact. I was like a different person. I didn't say anything. I didn't speak. I looked at the ground the whole time. I was a completely different, like an empty shell. And she tried to speak to him and, they had their own conversation. But throughout the day, he started to get very annoyed. And then I was just in bed and he came in and started doing the usual thing, trying to take my phone off me and pushing me. And my mother just packed up my stuff, says, we're getting out of here. And that was the end of that. Yeah.
So did you leave in the night?
Left in the middle of the night. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it feels like almost like your mum saved your life in terms of getting you out of that situation.
Yeah, I don't think I'd be here today if she hadn't have come over, to be honest.
Wow. Your mum gets you out of there in the middle of the night and then you need to start the journey home, but it's complicated.
Yeah, that's when we start talking to the lawyers, and because I still have a travel ban, So it seemed like, okay, if there's a court, they told me there's a court case the 18th of July, but then it could go on for months. And like, my mother can't stay out here with me months. And how can I rent a place here when I'm not able to work because I have a travel ban? Like, nothing. There was no way of getting out of it. It was just
too big.
Yeah, it was just too big.
And when it gets too big like that, you need to ask for help. And I know that from speaking to you on the phone that this was almost the hardest step, was speaking out.
Yeah. Especially like, I would have always been a private person, and I just, but I knew, I remember saying to my mother, I said, just press the send button before I change my mind, because we had given the go ahead to Radha. I said, just press send before, don't give me a chance to think about it, because then I'll overthink it. Just go with it.
And this was to press send on announcing that you were an Irish citizen was.
Yeah. And then it took off on Twitter. And, then my friends started to reshare things, and it within hours, like I thought it would take much longer to go as far as it did, but it was all in a matter of hours. And then, the embassy was on the phone to me. They were pulling up my medical records from the hospital, talking to authorities. And in the space of 24 hours, like, I was basically home, and I was talking on the phone to Simon Harris, and he said to me on the phone, he goes, we'll get you home no matter what, like, no matter what it takes.
How did it feel for somebody to have your back like that in that desperate time you were in?
It gave me like just a sense of relief, because I was so pessimistic. I just thought, there's no way, like, I'm stuck here. Like, this is it. Like I didn't, and I think for him to say, we won't stop until we get you home, until we're happy, to have like someone so high up kind of give you that reassurance was just like the best feeling ever. Like, it meant the world to me. And like I had Simon, I had Mary Lou was on the phone to me. I had like Claire Cron, who she I actually went to school with her. She was years above me. She was a TD. All of them messaging me, you know, making sure I was okay, keeping updated, like reassuring me. Like it was, I'll never be able to kind of put it in words. It just felt so surreal.
I would imagine that after feeling so unsafe to suddenly feel, or did you feel safe at that time?
No, it was like I don't want to get my hopes up until I'm back. I don't want to, it definitely gave me hope, but I just didn't want to get myself to, in case something went wrong. But then I think after a few hours of them been back and forth with the UAE authorities, I remember getting a text message saying all charges have been dropped. I was like, how fast they were able to do that.
You spoke so beautifully there about the kind of privilege that we have, and, you know, compared to these other women that were in the jail with you. And, you know, it's because of where you were from, probably, that you got let out. You must have felt so lucky in that moment.
Yeah, so lucky. And so it just gives you like a new appreciation, and you see your own country in a very different way. You know, like you come home and even seeing how green everything is, you know, and how beautiful the nature is here, and, you know, things that I wouldn't have noticed before.
Yeah.
And I said this to my friend on the phone the other day. I was getting a coffee, like an iced coffee at one of those, you know, coffee huts. Mm-mm. And the woman started making conversation with me about my dog, how beautiful my dog was. And it's those little things, like the friendliness as well of people here. You know, you go to other countries and you just get your coffee. They don't really make conversation with you. Like, just it's those little things that I notice now.
Yeah.
That I never noticed before.
It's like you just feel part of something bigger.
Yeah, definitely.
So tell me about then going to the airport and what, so you're with your mum, and obviously your mum Caroline is an earth angel. She literally, like I suppose any mum would do, is go and get their baby.
Yeah.
But tell us about getting the go ahead to go home and how quickly that happened.
God, we had, the flight was at 7 a.m, but it's like the next day we had the go ahead, and then Emirates organized the flight, and it was really good, you know. And the embassy came into the airport with us. They actually walked us to the plane door just to make sure that nothing else went wrong, so we had that extra reassurance, you
the
know?
Irish embassy.
Yeah, so we knew, because there always is that chance that you get to immigration, and even though they say everything's okay, maybe something will happen and it won't be okay. But they actually came to the plane door with us, and like it was really, really good. And then I kind of, when I got to the Dublin airport, they took me away to a different terminal so that I could just kind of get my thoughts together, because I wanted to just say thank you, because I knew, you know, only for like, as well, because of the media and stuff like that, they helped in a massive way too. So I wanted to just say thank you to everyone, and then I left. But it was, I still can't believe it. Sitting here now, when I think back, I actually can't believe it.
Just a short break to thank Dove Advanced Care Body Wash for supporting the Good Glow this season. 2024 is a big year for Dove. This is their best ever body wash with 24-hour renewing micro moisture. If your self-care needs an upgrade, you can choose to deeply nourish, hydrate, gently scrub or revive with 10 gorgeous variants. It's also free from sulfates, has biodegradable ingredients and is packaged in recycled plastic bottles. So say goodbye to dry skin this season and step out feeling more beautiful and confident in your own skin with thanks to Dove Advanced Care Body Wash.
I'm really glad that was your experience, and because I had Richard O'Halloran on my podcast last year, and he was on a travel ban in China but 4 years, and
yeah,
he had a really bad experience over there, and I'm so glad that you were out so quickly. Mm-hmm. But tell us about your dog and getting your dog home.
Yeah, so one of the things that I was so happy to be home, but I was heartbroken at the same time, because I didn't know where my dog was because he had her. And I was worried about her every day, especially because she was only a puppy. And then I was thinking, if he gets rid of her, she'll go to a kennel and, like, God knows where she'll end up. And then a random girl reached out to me on Instagram and basically said, I want to help you find your dog. And I didn't think it was possible, but she managed to track Rosie down, find out where she was, and send her back to Ireland to me. I'll never be able to thank her, because the amount of peace of mind she gave me, because I kept trying to, you know, get on day to day, but in the back of my head I felt so guilty over the dog, like, where is she? Because that was one of the reasons that I also stayed for so long, because obviously I love her, and the thoughts of her, you know, especially in Dubai, it's not a great place for dogs. It's very, very hot outside, and she was such an energetic puppy, and it was hard to move on with my life, because in the back of my mind, like, some people will just say, oh, it's just a dog. But to me, like, a dog is like family. When she contacted me, she found her and she talked about sending her back to me. I was just trying not to get too excited, but she's here now. Like, this girl is just like such a beautiful soul, just an amazing person. But as soon as I got her, I brought her for a walk on the beach in Bull Island. You know, and it's so crazy because, you know, she obviously doesn't know the Irish weather, and now she goes swimming in the lakes, goes in the forest, and she's just living her best life.
Like, from what I'm hearing from your story, there is so many important women along the way.
Yeah, so many.
The women in the cell, your mum, the women that helped you get home.
Yeah.
And the woman that helped you get your dog back.
Yeah, there's so many good people in this world. And I think that's what, when you go through something bad, like a bad situation, that's what you'll always find at the other side of it, is there's so many good people.
You must wake up in the morning and just think, was that a dream?
Yeah, sometimes it feels like it happened to somebody else and not me. Mm. Because in the beginning it was all very, very raw, but I remember thinking at the time, like, I'll never be happy again, I'll never laugh again, because I was afraid of meeting up with people, because it was always in the back of my mind. And now that, like, I've meeting up with friends, I just feel like I'm back to myself. When I came back, I was kind of frustrated at myself. Like, why can't I get up and go for a run like I used to? Or, you know, why can't I meditate? And I was just putting so much pressure on myself. And then I just said, okay, let's get one thing done every single day. Like, one thing at a time. Instead of, like, building myself up with all, like, a list of things to get done, and then getting angry at myself because I let myself down, because I didn't complete the list. I just took it literally day by day. And I think that's the only way.
Any of the incredible women that I've spoken to about trauma, it's, you're so frozen. It's so hard to even get up and face the day. Like, some days that's enough, you know, just to be out of your bed.
Yeah, you have to be kind to yourself and just think, it won't last forever. I won't feel this way every day. So every day is a small win. So just those small wins will keep building up.
What would you say to anybody who is suffering in a relationship and feels the way you felt, which was that there was no way out?
There's always a way. There's always a way. Because I know the feeling. It feels like there's no, like, how can I get out of this? But definitely reach out to people. But obviously it's hard sometimes if you're in a controlling relationship. It's, you know, because sometimes you are very much cut off from people. But never, ever put someone's happiness above your own, because you only get one life, and don't waste it. And if somebody loved you, they would never put you through that.
Yeah. And tell me then what your advice would be if somebody is looking on and has their suspicions that their friend might be in an abusive relationship.
Intervene. Because sometimes we think, oh, I don't want to get involved because maybe she'll be mad at me for getting involved in her relationship. But that person isn't themselves. like they need someone to intervene. They have to, you have to get in and try everything because they're not happy in the situation. And even though they won't want to admit it, they need help. They need someone to get them out because they're not strong enough to do it on their own.
And how is your mum?
She's good. She's good. She was probably a little bit traumatized in the beginning, but she's doing good now. Yeah.
Oh, that's so good. And I know, like, obviously it's, she's such a huge part of this story as well. So when I was chatting to you about coming on the Good Glow, I was like, you know, does your family support this? Is everyone okay? Because like, it's so personal. And I could see at the start, you know, the tears in your eyes, how difficult it is for you to tell this story. But why is it important for you to tell it?
Because once you've been there, you know how difficult it is. And sometimes it just takes one person. It might just listening to a podcast or just for something to click in someone's mind. And I think when you listen to someone who has been through something similar as you and you can see she made it out, she got through it, then it gives that person hope that they too can go on to live a happy life. And you know, when you do eventually get out of it, you know, 5-10 years down the line, you'll look back and it'll just be a blip in life's journey and it's not going to define who you are forever.
Yeah.
And you can get out of it.
It's interesting. Something Simon Sinek said, and I heard it on Diary of a CEO on a flight once, and Stephen Bartlett was talking about friends who he was trying to help and they weren't accepting the help. So they were going through a tough time and they weren't accepting the help. And Stephen Bartlett was like, so like, what do I do? Like, I've tried and tried and tried with these people and they won't accept help. So do I just give up on them? And Simon was like, let me just think about the answer that I want to give you because I want to make sure I'm giving you the right answer. But he said, sometimes people don't need your help or they don't need your sympathy. What they actually need is to be empowered to help others. And mm-hmm. I think when you were speaking to me and you were saying, you know, I share my story because it helps me get out of bed. It helps me to know that one person might hear this podcast and be able to leave or tell somebody. And sometimes when we're suffering, the best thing we can do is help other people because that's really what helps us get out of bed.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes you feel like, okay, well, maybe I've gone through this so that I can help other people.
Yeah.
You know, I can do good with this.
Yeah. And it's exactly the women that helped you. You will pass that on to another woman. And that's all as women that we can do for each other is share our stories, support each other, listen to each other and help each other feel seen.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Tori, you're I can't believe you're sitting in my house.
Me too.
But listen, thank you so much. And I know you've been through so much. And I think even as you're speaking about it, you're still trying to process it in so many ways.
Yeah.
But I'm grateful to you for telling your story on the Good Glow and trusting this platform to feel safe to do so.
Well, thanks for having me on.
A huge thank you to Tori for sharing her story, and it's been so lovely to get to know her over the past while. As I said in the intro, I have left important phone numbers in the show notes, and from myself and Tori, we hope that this podcast helps one person today. So that's it from this week. I will see you next week. But before I go, if you wanted to start our 14-day September Reset Challenge, you still can. You can start at any time in September. It's 10 minutes a day for 14 days. I'll leave a link in the show notes. And our Christmas show at the National Concert Hall, it's shaping up to be a good one. We've got live Christmas music. We're turning the National Concert Hall into a winter wonderland. It takes place on a Sunday at 5 p.m, the 1st of December. So we're going to officially kick off the festive season together. You can get the tickets in the show notes, and I will see you next week.